You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Morning, happy Thursday. It is the BWI Live Recruiting Show. I'm Thomas Frankar. I'm back. Ryan, you were not here earlier in the week when it sounded like I ate gravel before we came on the show. Hello. I have the full range of my voice again. Very excited for that. Also very excited to talk about recruiting. Although, Ryan, I'm just going to rip the Band-Aid off. How you doing? And what are we talking about today? What's going on?
Whatever you want to talk about. It's kind of that time of the year. I think we got about 3 weeks of this where it's, don't get me wrong, there'll be things to discuss. Coaches are out on the road. We went over the calendar in our last show. There will be things that pop up. Lots of new offers have popped up, but they're all 2027 kids. I don't know a lot about them. Let's be honest. I got to learn about so many of these freshmen that they're offering. But
how dare you not know something about a 15-year-old?
I mean, dude, there's a ton of sophomores are getting offered too that I got to learn about. And, you know, we know Penn State staff was out on the West Coast earlier in the week. We saw a lot of West Coast offers go out. Makes sense. Guys in Arizona, California. You know, we'll get into maybe some of that stuff a little bit later, but it is that kind of time of the year where a lot of evaluations going on. Things are kind of quiet from a public media perspective as far as what we, you know, information that we know is rock solid and can report on. So you got a couple more weeks of this. We're waiting for official visits. It's really kind of we got 30 some days until that happens.
Yeah, so that's really my question is, first off, welcome to the BWI Live Show. If you're here and you're hanging out, please like the video, share with your friends, let them know we're still talking about Penn State recruiting here in a bit of a slower time, giving you what I think today is going to be a good show, just to give you what we're talking about. We are going to be talking about some of Ryan's articles over at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com. Great time. I'm going to remind you about this later. Please subscribe to BlueWhiteIllustrated.com. Also, where does Penn State need to make up ground in this class? And then I think it's a good opportunity, Ryan. We haven't done this in a while, and so many of these players in the class of 2025 committed pretty early in the cycle. So it feels like there's a conscious forgetting of what's already in the class. So we're going to go over the class and kind of some highs, some lows in terms of where they rank and how things are shaking out. And then, of course, how all of that is going to work out once official visits come. But that is my question here to start is there anything Penn State, the coaching staff can do to maybe finagle a commitment in the next 4 or 5 weeks before official visits? Or are we truly just sitting tight until official visit season?
We've seen them before, but there's, I mean, if you look at the guys that they have official visits set with, right? I mean, there are a handful of them that we think they're the favorites with, but those guys also have official visits set elsewhere. And official visits in June have become kind of that, you know, you circle your calendar if you're a top recruit and you've been doing this for a year or so. So I don't see anything coming. You know, if something were to happen, it would be like a 2026, if I'm guessing, right? It would be a 2026 guy pops up on campus, spends a day with the staff, been here 4 or 5 times already, commits. Like, that would be my guess or my best prediction if something like that were to happen. Because, you know, if you've gotten to this point as a 2025, you know, junior about to be senior, and you're whatever, 35 days or so out from official visits, it just doesn't really make sense unless you absolutely know what you want to do. Like, Hayden Bradley is going to commit on Saturday. Don't expect it to be Penn State. He knows what he wants to do, though. But for so many of these other guys, they seem pretty open. And if you look at, we're going to get into this a little bit with Penn State's class breakdown, but like, if you look at the guys they have committed already and you look at the guys that, you know, they have OV'd or set to OV later, like there is some stacked talent, and these OVs are really going to determine, you know, where Penn State's class goes, because there is quite a few talented players and guys that shouldn't be making decisions right now because they have awesome options.
So before we get to the meat of the show, I want to remind you that this is all brought to you by My Perfect Franchise. Are you looking to leave the corporate rat race? Do you have a vision for your future that doesn't entail working for somebody else, being your own person, leaving a legacy for your family? Maybe you just want an exciting new chapter in your life. Check out My Perfect Franchise. Andrew Ludeke is a franchise consultant with extensive experience placing people like you, if you have those skills, with the perfect franchise to manage, whatever your skills might be. If you have, you know, construction expertise, you have software expertise, you have just general business acumen, doesn't matter. There is a business out there where there's an opportunity for you to determine your own future. The best way to protect your investments is to be in the right business. And Andy has personal experience managing franchises, is ready to share his knowledge with you. He's gone through the good and the bad in the business. He's had to fire his good friends. He's had to make tough decisions. He's had to close on some businesses and move on and cut his losses and find a better successful path forward. All these things that I don't have any qualifications to talk to you about. He's going to help you with all that stuff. 404-973-9901 or Andy at MyPerfectFranchise.net. That's Andy at MyPerfectFranchise.net or 404-973-9901. Okay, so one of the interesting conversations, and this is going to kind of lead into what we're talking about today with the class of 2025 reset, is you talked to Charles Power about offensive tackle Owen Alsine, who's a new four-star member in the class of 2025, four-on-three. Mm-hmm. What did he say about the reasoning behind the change from where he was to where he is now?
Yeah, a couple things I think really kind of make the most sense in explaining it. One, he was already on the bubble. I mean, he was an 89 three-star. But if you really go and look at the 94 star or the 89 three star, especially in this class, at least according to Charles, like it's very close. I mean, if you compare it to rivals 24/7, I mean, there's a good group of, I don't know, maybe a dozen or so offensive linemen there that you can mix and match and you can make arguments for. So with Owen, I think a couple things really kind of pushed him up. One, his size. I mean, we've got an updated size on him. Just as at the blue-white game a couple weeks ago. I mean, legit, he is almost just under 6'8 right now. I mean, he's legit 6'7 and a half, more like 6'7 and three quarters, honestly. I mean, he's probably going to hit 6'8, which is impressive. You know, 270 pounds right now, and a guy that can easily get to 300, 310. And that was kind of Charles's big thing when you're projecting his frame.
Are you saying 300 eventually or 300 before college? Because I think that's, I think that's important.
I think more so eventually. I mean, we'll see. Okay. I think Charles's mindset was like, look, this is a guy who he could be 6'8", 310 and move really well. And the other point I'm getting to is, you know, just learning more testing times and different kind of athletic things that he's been able to accomplish. I mean, the guy has a 4'8 shuttle. At 6'7", 260 some pounds. I mean, think about that for a second, man. That's moving, you know, for a player that size. So anything, yeah, 4'9" under, 4'8" under is really good for a top offensive tackle prospect. And that, I think that was a number that kind of grabbed our staff's attention. And then I think the last thing really was just that he's had more time, and not just him, but Cody Belair, other people who scout for on three, have had just more time to go through individual game film. And then we talk all the time about highlight films and yeah, they're important, right? I mean, they kind of, that's what grabs people's attention, but how much more important is it, T Frank? And you know, this better than anyone, is just going through actual individual film, because you got to see the mistakes.
Yep.
The mistakes are kind of how you separate guys, right? All these guys have flashy, good plays. It's really who's making the least amount of mistakes that kind of usually bump guys up or at least solid fundamentally, things like that. So I think those are really the big three things. Updated size, you know, really seeing him continue to grow. And then obviously, again, the shuttle time was big. We learned that. And then also just being able to watch that individual film more.
Yeah, he's a guy, when you go through his film, the more you watch him. And there's little things like, why are you playing right tackle on your team if you are as athletic as Ryan just outlined? And for some teams, it's because Avon Oldfarm had two college level tackles. One of them was a year older, and Owen knew where to play in the offensive line, seemingly played on the right side. You know, you just had a conversation, I know, with Charles Power about Tyler Merrill. Tyler Merrill plays, I believe he played on the right side for a while as a freshman, going to play on the left. Like those, I think those conversations about what happens in high school and what you're exposed to, those matter as well. So you can see here on the screen, he's a 90 overall in the On3 ranking. He is part of the On300, and this is, I think, a great transition into the Penn State offensive line has three members, if we're counting Brady O'Hara, and I know that one's still kind of up in the air. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but you also wrote about where they need to make up ground, where this group of players, where the coaching staff needs to put in some commitments into the class. I want to start with the secondary. I want to start in an area where traditionally, over the last 5 years, I'd say, maybe four, Penn State's, you know, hit this out of the park, whether it's in the transfer portal or recruiting. They've done a great job of identifying and recruiting talent into the secondary and changing a long-standing narrative about the Nittany Lions. So are you surprised that they only have one commitment in the class in Xavier Thomas, who we kind of see as a slot corner at the moment? Or is this a situation where you just talked about it, we kind of opened the show talking about this, official visits are coming up, and they are after some top talent. And those decisions are made in the next couple of months.
Just look at the guys that they're really after, though. Like Jameer Joseph's from the region, Brandon Finney are from the region. You know, but so many of these other guys aren't really regional guys. You know, the players that they are able to get to commit early. And even Jameer Joseph, for example, you know, he hasn't been nearly as active visiting schools as so many others. And then Brandon Finney, man, he didn't even have an offer until a handful of months ago. You know, he starts running some of those elite times in indoor track. And man, his recruitment really was just kind of getting started. He didn't visit Penn State for the first time until, I think, January is what it was. So just when you look at the region and you look at the circumstances of the guys that they really want in the region, and then you also, you know, cast that net out there and realize how many national guys there are, talking cornerback mainly, it makes sense. That's not really that much of a surprise. Penn State would have loved to host Jameer Joseph 4, 5, 6 times by now, but he came early on, you know, so kind of laying low a little bit more than most recruits, I would say, over the past year. But then at safety, look, we've been talking about Jaden Blair and Kanoa Winston for a very long time. Winston's been up to Penn State a ton and then really kind of spent the last 4 or 5 months trying to see other schools. Makes sense, right? I mean, that's what he needs to do. He knows he's comfortable with Penn State. He knows all about Dex and, you know, how he's developed his cousin, of course, KJ. He laid that groundwork early on, and now he has to go and figure out the other schools that'll be in the mix. So yeah, it really just kind of, to me, it's not really much of a surprise, just because, again, when you look at who they're recruiting, I mean, Jaden Blair is visited all over the place. And he enjoys visits. I mean, it's very clear that Jaden Blair enjoys visiting schools. So he was always kind of expected to get to official visits. I mean, Blair has taken, scroll down there, T-Frank. How many visits has Blair taken? I mean, it is a ton. So I think if you're not on the recruiting, it might not show. But
yeah, there we go.
Anyway, my point is just like, it's just look at the circumstances for each of these guys. It's not all that surprising. You'd have to click on, go all the way down. Keep going. Click view all. I do my best to try and. No, now you're on film. All right, we're done. You screwed it up. Now you're on film. Anyway, they should be fine. You know, I think as long as they can get Jameer Joseph or Brandon Finney, they get one of those regional corners, and then they get at least one of Jaden Blair and Kanoa Winston, one of those two each. Talking three guys then, and they can absolutely pull in a Grayson Littleton from Florida or Josh Johnson from Ohio. So there's the net is wide enough. And the history of Dex and Terry Smith is, you know, as they've been as good of recruiters on this team as anyone over the last couple of years. There's no reason in my eyes to be very concerned about that.
So that's the secondary. We talked about the safeties and the corners. And I guess generally I'm going to ask you about this. We can talk about the other positions if you want. We can get into a little more detail, but wide receiver and defensive line are the two other positions in your article. How confident are you based on talent available, relationships as far as you understand them, that Penn State is going to get a couple of guys across the line to buttress the four stars of the class of 2025 and keep that average and all those things we're going to get to in just a little bit, keep that where it's been recently for the Nittany Lions when it comes to their average recruiting ranking and general talent level in the classes dating back several years?
Yeah, I mean, well, just that wide receiver, look, they're in the mix with quite a few guys. Matthew Otten, I think, is massively important. Jeff Exner is massively important. Lex Cyrus, massively important. All three. Otten's not a four-star yet. I'd be shocked if he's not a four-star by the time he signs. He's a guy that I know Sean and I have been talking to Charles about, that we think he's a little underrated at the moment. Definitely underrated. But Cyrus and Jeff are both kind of four-star guys. You know, Exner just took an OV to Virginia Tech this past weekend. You know, heard lots of good things. You know, I saw some people put in picks for it. I don't feel that way yet. I think if he was committed, he would have committed to Vautech by now. So I don't really see, I'm not too concerned there yet. I mean, sources I talked to, at least Penn State doesn't seem too concerned. As long as they get him for an OV, you have that relationship with Kenny Sanders, you know, they'll be fine. Even if he were to commit to Vautech, there ain't no chance that recruitment would be over either. So we'll see. You know, yeah. Lex Cyrus has been quiet. We know he went to Miami. You know, he went to South Carolina. Penn State has a massive advantage when it comes to, you know, not just visits, but just kind of understanding the school relationships, all those things. So, I mean, there's a lot that bodes well there. And, you know, and Otten's a guy who's been incredibly quiet, put out that top 60 the other day, didn't include Georgia, which kind of surprised me because there was certainly talk that Georgia was in the mix. But Vautech, I would have, is probably Penn State's top competitor in that group. I thought South Carolina, a couple others were in there. I forget all five of the other schools. But and then you got, again, that this is just like a corner where you got a ton of national guys coming in for official visits later in the year or in June. So just kind of have to see if you can get, you know, two of those three kind of regional guys that you're really high on. And then, you know, somehow, you know, get like an Andrew Marsh down the road, or even Romero Eason, like he just committed to USC, but they're going to keep pushing there. You know, there's the net is wide enough that I still feel pretty good. And even if you, I mean, look, if you just get two of the three regional guys that we talked about, and then you already have Lyric Samuel in there, I mean, you're talking about, you know, two top 300 recruits, and then Jeff Exner, who's a four-star in the industry ratings. So, you know, if Penn State signs three four-star wide receivers in this class, I think most fans would be fairly happy with that, right?
But I mean, is it enough to get them over the hump?
But I don't think that comes. No, I mean,
sorry,
it depends on what you mean by over the hump. Yeah.
Oh, just the general idea, right? And not a serious
hump
question.
This year, like, obviously,
there's obviously no way to know that. But just the idea that no matter what it is, unless it produces on the field, it doesn't matter. Like, you know, recruiting, development, etc. Just the general theme of Penn State wide receivers being hyper specific. Here's a question for you that has come a couple of times. We talked about this with Fitz on the Mailbag show. Penn State has recruited several players that are highly athletic tight ends. Andrew Olish is the next one on the list. And the question keeps coming up. Why can't he play wide receiver? So, Ryan, I'll ask you this week. Why can't Penn State's tight ends play big-bodied wide receiver roles?
Because they don't want them to play those roles. I don't know how to answer that question. If they wanted them to play those roles, they'd play those roles.
Yeah.
What else is there to say? You know, clearly, these guys are smart enough. They're smarter than me, smarter than all of us to understand, you know, what kind of role these guys would fit in best. So, I mean, they've split out. They've split in the slot, you know, before, too. Are you saying, like, as like a Z?
Yeah.
You think that they should be doing that?
No, God, no. Oh, okay. Listen, sometimes I ask I am the conduit for the question. That's it. Like, this is not an opinion. This is things that there has been a refrain of. Penn State fans want the receiver question solved, and they want it solved by somebody with a high four-star ranking, and a guy who's not going to play a tight end this year sitting on the depth chart in Luke Reynolds. The question is, why can't he play X? Why can't he play Z? Why can't he be on the football field?
If he could, he would be.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say.
It's just attacking this from a different perspective. And also, I want to give everyone's voice a chance to be heard on the show. Moving on to defensive line. We got our first look at what Deion Barnes can do last year with quite a big class. Some big ticket kind of swings from a talent perspective. What are you seeing so far this year? Any new insight into him as a recruiter and this process? You know, as we get into his first full recruiting cycle.
Yeah, this is the one that I have, I don't want to say the most questions about, because again, it's another big net, but a lot of national guys. I think someone like Yvonne Camacho and Jaden Lofton, you know, two guys that are New Jersey, Maryland guys, like I think they like them a lot, but they seem to still be shooting higher, you know, for Max Granville's of the world, the Zayden Walkers of the world. you know, a handful of those kind of guys, maybe Jaden Woods. And Jaden Woods is a player that, you know, they can realistically get. He's more of a DN than some of these other guys, but or at least Camacho. Camacho's a D tackle. Anyway, right now they have Deshaun Burnett. I think Deshaun Burnett is going to be a DN long term. You know, so I kind of include him as a DN right now. I still think you can see probably two more DNs, maybe three more DNs, one D tackle or two and two. Still feel like there should be three to four more additions in this class, but the board is very hard to read. Or at least I think it is. As far as, you know, the players who they're absolutely in good shape with or can realistically land, you know, that there's guys like Cedric Works who I think would work really well for Penn State, no pun intended. But you know, there's work to be done in other areas. I'll leave it at that as far as other things. You know, a couple other guys. It is like a Randy Adorica. Like, does he, you know, from Miami Central? Like, is Penn State going to land a guy from Miami Central? It's just, that's not something we see very often. Maybe it happens, but it just, yeah. I'm looking down throughout these boards and through these guys that they're planning to host, and I don't see too many guys that I feel like, you know, they're absolutely the favorite with. So D-line right now is certainly the one I'd have circled as like this position can maybe drag out past the summer. Now, again, we also will get to the back half of June OV wise, and they'll be adding guys, you know, as others mm-hmm. commit elsewhere and things like that. So, you know, maybe from that perspective, they're able to wrap it up by July. But, you know, there's just a lot of questions, or at least like a lot of top guys that I think, yeah, they probably have Penn State top three, but top three doesn't get the signature in the end. So,
right. So let's talk about what Penn State has in the class so far. You kind of outlined part of this by talking about what isn't in the class, but these are some interesting rankings. Obviously, you can go just the straight ranking. Penn State is 16th nationally in the team rankings. Their class score is 90.41, which is 16th. Can you explain class score for us, Ryan?
It's just the average of the player rating. You know, you have 93s, okay. You got 88s. They're at a 94 right now, which is like basically a low 4-star. I mean, again, we're using the industry ranking too. We're not using the on three specific rating. So it fluctuates a little bit, but it's basically saying right now Penn State's average should be low 4-star players.
And you can see as that works out here in the
and again,
makeup,
those are what you're showing though is on threes ratings. So like what I just said, and then you show that, it makes absolutely no sense, right? But if you look at the right, industry ranking, it's a little bit different. That's all. And again, there are also guys who are ranked like a 92 to 93, and that bumps that up a little bit. There may be only a handful of 4-stars, but you know, that bumps things up a little bit. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to read what's on camera for people listening on the podcast, where there are, according to the on three rankings, 4 4-stars, 8 3-stars. And again, just to give you a review of the class, we're going to show that here for you on screen. And Ryan, kind of want to go through some of these players that, I feel like at a certain point forgot a little bit about, including DJ McClary, who committed a while ago, as you mentioned, a 92 overall. What's your feel on the makeup of this class so far in terms of where it fits within the stacking of classes that Penn State's done over the last couple of years?
I mean, if you look at it right now, I think fans would probably be a little underwhelmed, right? A lot of 3-star guys, a lot of higher rated, you know, guys in the 800s, 600s, 500s, but that's why we also talk about, like, let's not overthink this yet, too. I mean, there's a lot of evaluation to be done. We got multiple camps coming to the Northeast here soon. Mm-hmm. And that stuff will really shake out. I think when you get to July after camp season, that's massive, because we're going to collect so many testing numbers then, testing numbers that Penn State has that we don't. And now we usually see a couple of guys move around after that. And then, again, once you get into the season, then those evaluations are crucial, too. But yeah, I mean, I've had a ton of fans talk about, you know, why are they taking this player, this player, and this player, you know, when you have X, Y, and Z still available? Well, you don't want to get caught flat-footed. I know people are always like, well, you can flip somebody in the end, but there's a lot of times where, you know, say like Alvin Henderson, I think, is a great example of this. Like, did they really need another third running back? No, I don't know that they needed it, but like, this is a player that they really liked. And if they say to him, hey, look, you know, we really like you, but maybe now's not the right time. Let's see where things go. Like, there ain't no chance he's coming back around. And I think that's the case probably for some of these guys as well. It's a major turnoff, especially when you're a school like Penn State, who recruits as hard or harder than any other school, at least in the region, you know, when it comes to just absolutely staying on top of guys week or day in, day out, week out.
Yeah.
You know, anyway, like that.
Be a bit disingenuous for you to be like, we really want you, but right. not right now. That doesn't right. make a whole lot of sense.
So, look, I mean, there's quite a few guys here that I still think can move up in ratings. I mean, I've talked about Lyric a lot. We have him at 0-3. We have him as a you know top 25 receiver right now. But if you look at the ratings for industry ratings, you know he's 570 in the country and the 95th ranked receiver. Well, I'm telling you guys, there's a reason we have him as high as we do, and that's because we have testing numbers that I don't think other people have. But mm-hmm. those testing numbers will get out there eventually, and that will bump him up. I mean, he's a legit 6'4", running a 4.5. Like this is a heck of a playmaker, an athlete, whatever you want to call him. Go ahead.
I guess the thing about this class, it does seem like there is a lot of, I don't even know the way to phrase it, but as you mentioned, like three-star players, kind of guys that don't have a whole lot of recruiting sizzle, but also like just a guy that I have a hard time with, Tyke Hayes. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe the testing numbers aren't great, but there's some special in terms of what he's able to do as a running back. Keandre Barker, great testing times, hasn't played football. Mm-hmm. So is just the makeup of this class kind of obscuring? Like, for example, again, another kind of the makeup of this class is Brady O'Hara. He's 6'6", 255. Is he a tight end? Is he a tackle? I feel like there's some hard to quantify stuff here in this class. Deshaun Burnett, you've already mentioned. Is that part of the narrative here that maybe this class is better on the football field than it is in the rankings? And does it translate a little bit differently than maybe some of the other ones where you have guys that, like, for example, you have a 5-star offensive lineman in a class and in Javon Williams or something like that, and that's something you can, like, that's tangible. He's an offensive lineman, going to be an offensive lineman. You can project that to the field, and so those things translate easier.
Yeah. I mean, let's also remember the other thing, too, like, all the guys you just mentioned, they're all PA guys. Yeah, that is right. incredibly important to James. He does not want to let those guys get away. And, you know, they've scouted all these guys enough and had pretty much all of them have camped too. Again, coming back to, they have information that not all of us have when it comes to how athletically gifted some of these guys really are, but we will get when camp seasons roll around, when Under Armour camp gets here, when Elite 11 comes into town, all 22. I'm missing, you know, underclassmen report. You know, all these camps are about to come and hit the Northeast, and the majority of these guys will be there. So, you know, I understand why fans have questions about some of the players that they've taken commitments from right now. But at the end of the day, you know, I feel like oftentimes we credit the staff for being really good at evaluating players and taking, or at least they'll evaluate a guy, they'll offer a guy early, and then within a handful of months, you know, that guy has 30 plus offers, right? And we're right. like, oh, look how good they are at finding talent before other schools get on players. Well, you can't praise that and then kind of go against what they've done with some of these guys. Because if they are as good at evaluating talent as I do believe they are, and I think a lot of fans believe that too, well, then, you know, maybe there's a reason they took some of these guys when they did. And maybe there's other schools that are just missing out. And maybe scouts like us are missing out. Mm-hmm. On some of these guys. So it's April, you know, again, with so many camps coming up and everything we're about to have over the next 2.5-3 months, it's one of those things where check back in September and I feel like we can have a more serious discussion.
It's just a very interesting class. I think you mentioned a couple of weeks ago that they're, by this point in some recruiting cycles, they would have had somebody with sizzle, you know, a Quentin Martin, in the class, or, you know, maybe somebody in the secondary. And it just feels like a lot of those decisions were, there was nobody that committed around the blue-white game. So there has been kind of this really wide delta of time between the last commit, you know, Alvin Henderson in the middle there, but really like they did a lot of this work early, which I think is just interesting to review these players to give you an idea that, you know, they do have talent in the class, and Penn State fans are probably hoping for more often, but all of that stuff is kind of coming up. I guess the last thing is just when you're looking at this class compared to 2024 and where they are, I think the average star ranking I was seeing was like 88 in this class, and it was 91, I want to say, last year. So is this in line with where Penn State is generally in their timeline before they, you know, get the full class, all 20 plus players, and then it kind of usually you bring this up all the time. It equates to around the same level of talent each year. Are they still on track for that in your mind?
I think for the most part. I mean, last year they're at a 94-1. Is that what we said this year? Average class score was a 90.41. Yeah. I think last year's finished with a 91.23. Well, again, it comes back to the topic that we had at the beginning of the show. Official visits will be absolutely imperative for this class, especially this class, even more so than some of the last classes. Just because, again, when you look at the talent they're bringing in, I mean, that first weekend has, let me look at this. This first weekend, 10 four-star players out of the 12 they plan to bring in. That's a pretty high number.
Yeah.
And look, you got to hit on just a couple of those guys. And it's not that high. The ratio is not that high every one of these weekends, but you know, my point is there are just some really important players for them who decided, hey, we're going to take these OVs. And, you know, some years you see that, some years you don't. It's come back again on July 15th. And I feel like that's a discussion we can really have of where this relates to last year's class.
Some of the questions here in the chat, I'm going to put them up here. And I think, you know, we've talked about this in a bunch of different ways. And the answer that Ryan's going to give is the one he just gave, which is official visits are coming up. There's no decision determination you can make. How much do bowl games play into January recruiting? Andrew Berger says, can you deny we got off to a bad start?
Not at all. Not at all. No one gives a damn about bowl games anymore. And it sucks because I love bowl games. And I know you do too, probably, Andrew. But I don't think recruits really pay attention to that at all. I really don't. No one. I've never had a recruit bring up like, oh my God, did you see Ole Miss top receivers beat up on Penn State's, you know, third and fourth cornerbacks in that game? Like, no. It is what it is. You know, it's just everybody's sitting out. It stinks. I hate it. You know, the playoff, I guess, will help to some degree with that, but that doesn't matter.
Stephen Keel asks, do you think Penn State recruiting being what it seems to be is down because of NIL to high school players or have a lot of players been sticking around?
No, I mean, that's definitely part of it. We can't talk about how NIL spreads out the talent, but then think it wouldn't impact a school like Penn State. I mean, Matt Zollers is the perfect example. This is a guy who more often than not would end up at a Penn State or a Georgia, but I'm pretty confident in saying Missouri came in strong, very strong from an NIL perspective. So, yeah, I think a lot of the times when you're having this discussion about NIL and how it helps distribute talent, you know, we always talk about, well, you know, all the five stars aren't going to Alabama and Georgia and, you know, whatever schools anymore. Well, guess what? A lot of those top four stars are getting spread out too. And those are guys that Penn State would have had in some other years. So it's just kind of a new world. Penn State's got to do better from a, you know, overall NIL perspective, right? But every school does. It's not. I feel like we talk about the subject a little more than we should, but it is an important subject. I don't want to deny that it's not. But you know, at the end of the day, I think really what you're going to see is like fans are going to look at rankings all the time. Team rankings. Where are they at? Yep. Team rankings. Well, look, there's a lot of they've sat so often between 11, 12, 13, like somewhere in that ballpark, right outside the top 10. Yep. But now, again, I think we talked about this a show or two ago, you know, when you have Auburn and Miami and some of these incredibly aggressive NIL schools who haven't really done a whole lot on the field, well, they get bumped up because they're being so incredibly aggressive with NIL. And so that's going to bump Penn State down to 16th, which is where they are. Because again, you know, normally it's about wins and what you've done for me lately. Now it's not about just wins and what you've done for me lately.
Yeah. We'll see what the playoff brings because there's a new variable coming up this year, right? And there's a new mile marker in college football with all of these other things that are going on. So does that change the equation? Does Penn State get any advantage of making the playoff if they make the playoff this year? That is a long way away. And it feels right now, sitting here with you, Ryan, like official visits are a long way away, too. When we're talking about, well, let's get to official visits and see what happens. Like, got a lot of show left before we get to talk about those. But there are more players that have been added to the list, more names that we can talk about, more highlights we can show here. So you've been working really hard on getting all these lists and putting all these players together, and you can check out those at bluewhiteillustrated.com. I'm going to drop the link in the description of the video as well to remind you. You can go grab it there. His other article is already in there. But who are some of the names that you've added that you want to talk about here on the show today?
I think Camaja is the way to start. Defensive tackle out of Maryland. again, this is such an important position for Penn State this year. Not important position. Let me clarify. It's a interesting position. They took 4 defensive tackles last year, so they're actually pretty good numbers wise. They feel pretty good about the guys they brought in. But just from when I look at this board, and I'm trying to figure out like who are their top guys. Well, they've had quite a few commit elsewhere. I mean, obviously Trent Wilson goes elsewhere. Landon Rink was a guy they wanted to bring in. Darren Ikenagbon would have probably been a defensive tackle. He's the end on 3, but he's a guy who was already pushing 250 pounds at like 6'5". So he would have obviously kept growing and moved inside. So Camacho is one of the more recent adds to the list. And he's always a guy that has been intriguing. A guy we know they really like, but he's just kind of quiet too. He really hasn't visited a whole lot of schools much. I mean, we know he's been to Penn State back in January, and I believe he said he went to Maryland, Virginia Tech, and one other this spring. But he has 4 OVs set up now. Penn State will be the first one, May 31 to June 2nd. And then it'll be West Virginia, Duke, and Virginia Tech. And Duke was one of the other schools he did tell me that he went and visited here recently. So, you know, that's out of those 4 schools, you would think Penn State should be in a pretty good position with him. So see where things go. It's just, again, it's just such a, like, is he one of their top guys? I'm really struggling to read both DN and D tackle at the moment as far as, you know, who are those 2 or 3 guys that they're really going to push all out for.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, part of it is the region being down. I know Fitz has talked about the defensive end position being down as well in this particular cycle. So it's been an interesting it's always interesting to try and evaluate the job these guys are doing in the middle of the job they're doing. And that doesn't stop us from talking about Marcus Higgins or Deion Barnes in either positive or negative lights, depending on the results. But the process has been super interesting to follow, given, you know, the landscape that these guys are working in. Everyone wants to know about receivers. Corey Sims, what do you think about this particular add to Penn State's official
list? Good one. Yeah, this is a guy that – so I did a story, I don't know, maybe a month ago, and I was, like, breaking down, like, who were kind of their plan A guys, their plan B guys at receiver. And Sims was one that, you know, I wasn't really sure on going into it, and I left, you know, the sourcing for that story realizing how high he is on Penn State's board. And look, they already have one receiver in Samuel who's, you know, legit 6'4", 170, like brings that size. But Corey Sims brings that too. And, you know, I don't want to pretend that adding size is the end all be all and something incredibly important, but it is. It's part Sean of it. And I kind of Sean and I kind of disagree on this a little bit more. Like, Sean doesn't think it's as important. I still think it kind of is. So long story short, this is another guy. I think they're going to get Quincy Porter? No, I don't. He's kind of the third when it comes to the long rangier guys. So to lock an official visit with Corey Sims, you know, gives them another opportunity, you know, to add, you know, somebody who can really kind of make an impact as a Z receiver. He's locked in for May 31, June 2nd, which, you know, will be an incredibly important weekend for them. And then he has USC following weekend and then Nebraska, Missouri. So I think a lot of people have kind of been leaning towards Missouri. I'd be curious to know, you know, how much Zoller's commitment could potentially impact some things there. You know, he's from St. Louis, you know, so that's a big part of it. Obviously, we can't talk about NIL and not mention that, you know, Corey Sims will probably be a guy that they can aggressively attract as well. So we'll see. But just getting him at least in that group, which now I think they have 9 or 10 wide receiver OV set, you know, to try and land basically 2 to 3 more. So it's a big pool, but this is an important one for them. This guy would be, you know, out of those 9 receivers they have visits set with, I would have him probably in the top 5.
Yeah, and I think it's a fair thing to bring up when you do have a new position coach and he brings his opinions about the position to the room. It's a fair conversation. I mean, I asked him looking at the film of Virginia receivers over time, and part of recruiting is like, who can you get in the building, but also like, who are you going after? And he said, yeah, I think it's fair to say that I prefer physical receivers, guys that can do certain things like high point the football and play through traffic and play through contact. And some of the coaching that I've seen him do kind of lean into those characteristics. Now, his most most famous receiver, Olamide Zaccheaus, is 5'9". So it absolutely is. It doesn't matter in the end. If you can ball, you're going to play and they're going to try and recruit you. But, you know, when you have those kind of flavor preferences, Taylor Stubblefield was a smaller receiver that was an excellent route runner and a technician at the position. And you see what Penn State has on their team, a bunch of really technical guys that can run routes. So, like, you know, there are certain things you lean into, I imagine. Who else is on the list that you want to talk about today?
I'd say the last one, I'd say probably Grayson Littleton, cornerback out of Florida. This is a guy who really is kind of moving up in the rankings steadily. I mean, 0-3 now has him at number 111 in the country, 13 at the position. And I think others will catch up to that too. I mean, 24/7 also has him as a top, you know, 250 or so player. So it's not like he's 4-star here and 3-star everywhere else, but I do think he's just kind of, from what we've seen 7-on-7 wise and on the camp scene, because the camps have been down there in Florida, he's going to continue to rise up the board, and he's kind of risen up Penn State's board as well. Another May 31, June 2nd, again, that weekend's going to be massively important. He hasn't announced his official visits to other schools yet, which is interesting. We kind of thought he would when he announced his top 10. So we put out the Penn State visit knowing we confirmed it with him. He was fine with us announcing it. And we thought he would announce the other OVs too, but he didn't. All he did was announce his top 10, which was Alabama, Florida, Iowa, Kansas State, Kentucky, Michigan State, Ole Miss, Rutgers, and UCF. He's a kid originally from Kansas too. And since he's made that move to Florida, you know, playing it, you know, against, well, he's at Wiregrass Ranch, which is a great school outside of Tampa. It's really kind of elevated his stock. And really, I mean, since last season, you know, he's just kind of carried it over to everything this all season as well. So another guy that I think Penn State can realistically land. I do think Terry Smith has done a good enough relationship wise that they will be top two, top three. I want to see who those other official visits are, though, before I kind of really push that, if that makes sense.
Yeah. If you're checking out the YouTube video, if you're listening to the podcast, I encourage you every once in a while to check out the YouTube video, because I play the highlights. And one of my least favorite things is when you see a ton of special teams on a guy's tape. Usually means he's a great athlete. And then you get to see so much less of him playing his actual position, because it's just 45 seconds of him running past high school kids. So on the highlights there, he's got a ton of kick returns. Tells you, like, the athleticism to play the cornerback position is obviously there, and Penn State is looking for athletes to play. So playing in Florida, and he's a kick return guy. I think Cam Miller is a great example of that, who was somebody that stood out on special teams a lot early in his career and then became a corner later and as it developed into that. So Ryan, awesome list. Once again, go to bluewhiteillustrated.com to get his full list. And if you're wanting that a little extra dose of info, you want a little bit more, go subscribe. And you can do that 2 months for just $1, because you're listening to the podcast. Code PSU1 gets you 2 months for just $1. Ryan, appreciate you holding down the fort, having a conversation with me, bringing some awesome insight into the class of what is and what is to come. Any last thoughts of what you're working on this week for the site?
I'm not working on anything these next 3 days, baby. It's Luke Holmes weekend. Let's go. Have a fun
weekend. Oh, so you're coming to visit. You're coming up to town.
Yeah, but I don't know if I want to publicize it too much, because I might be a little sloppy. A little bit.
Yeah, just wear a fake mustache. You'll be fine. You're not recognizable anymore. Definitely not.
I probably shouldn't wear this hat. I probably end up will, though. Who knows? I kind of wear this hat everywhere, but not. Obviously, look, it's tracking, you know, more official visits. Let's see. Mm-hmm. There will be a couple guys that I can see popping up. Trying to figure out, kind of, not really necessarily trying to figure out where Penn State's going with all these assistant coach contact visits, because We know where they're going. You know, they're going to visit a lot of guys that they're taking official visits with, especially since it's a contact period now, and they can have one-on-one conversations with the players, their coaches, their parents. And that's what they're really doing. They're kind of laying the groundwork for these OVs. The thing I'm kind of will be trying to learn a little bit more, like, who are those 5, 6, 7 2025 guys who maybe don't have a OV set yet, or maybe even some of them do, but like how they perform this spring and during spring practice, or how that live eval impacts where they're really at on Penn State's board. And that's something I kind of started working on yesterday a little bit. You know, it's tricky to get in touch with people right now, because they're traveling all over the place. But my point is that's something I'll kind of keep chipping away at here over the coming days. And maybe hopefully next week I can get a better feel for, you know, a couple of those guys. Like Michael, one that stands out right away is like North Carolina O-lineman Michael Gibbs. Like, I know he's a guy that really kind of always been right on the bubble. Noah Davenport to some degree too. I'd have Davenport a little bit over Gibbs, but just kind of figuring out those guys that, like, you know, okay, when Troutwine goes to see him, how much does that live eval, you know, impact whether he gets an official visit or not? So we'll keep chipping away at that. Yeah, go from there.
Couple other things I've been thinking about this week. Be stupid not to talk about it. Reggie Bush getting his Heisman back. What do you think?
Awesome.
I think, is there anyone that thinks otherwise? Is there anybody left in America who's like, you know,
sure.
What?
Sure. I mean, I understood, you know, at the time. I mean, look, his parents got like houses and stuff, right? I mean, yeah, sure. That was what it was at the time, but I don't know. I mean, he was, I think if it was other Heisman, if it was like Jameis Winston or something, like I think people wouldn't be so passionate about it. But Reggie, right. Reggie Bush was, I mean, in my generation, how many more exciting players can you name over him? I mean, I put a tweet out the other day. Like, I remember that 05 Fresno State game like it was yesterday. I remember exactly where I was. 500 some total yards in that game. Like, it was one of the most incredible performances I've ever seen. And, you know, add in national championships and all the other things he did. Like, I think that's why fans are pretty passionate about that. So, awesome. Man, good for him.
Last thing, and I think that this probably relates to a good number of our viewers and subscribers. Happy draft day to those that celebrate. Mm. Do you have a preference for the Eagles? Is there anyone you got an eye on? Do you?
Greg's the Eagles fan. Yeah, Greg's the Eagles fan. Not really me. I mean, I love the Philadelphia Phillies. That is my team that I live and die with. Birds, Sixers, Flyers. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I pull for them, but like, I never grew up like a passionate NFL fan of any really specific team. So the Phillies, we can talk. Shoot, I'll talk baseball draft with you before I can really talk NFL draft, just because, you know, that's
you will
my
have
thing.
To lead the conversation, and I will be there going, uh-huh.
Don't get me wrong. Yeah, I follow the NFL draft. I'm not going to pretend I don't follow it. I just don't want to pretend that, like, you know, they need a corner. I think I've read enough that the Eagles should take a corner or a wide receiver. You know, I've read enough of that kind of stuff, but there's people probably in this chat that follow that closer to me, and I don't want to sound stupid.
Yeah, I just generally, Howie Roseman, I think, is probably the best GM in football. You know, him, Les Snead, has done a great job with the Rams. And then I think John Schneider with the Seahawks. Guys that have been around long enough to, like, have a really long resume of not just building one team or getting lucky with one player, but having several different eras of being really good. So one of the things I know they like to do is stock positions for the future. And if there's a guy there that doesn't necessarily fit the need, you know, I know corner's been huge and they do need a corner, but like, if there's an offensive lineman, a D end or something like that on the board when they're there at 20, they'll take that guy and take the, you know, the cliche of best player available, but also with an eye towards, we want to replace this player to help with cap, age, all those things. So I'm always like jealous of the Eagles a lot of times, because I feel like they actually do they don't just evaluate good players. They have a good long-term plan. It feels like a lot of teams are kind of like stuck in the moment of, what do we need right now? What do we need to do right now for this year, instead of like taking the long view? So I'm excited for the draft in general. I used to follow it. And like, I think, you know, I used to do like player evaluations of all the players in the draft, and now the Bills are good. And I feel like they do a decent job at drafting, so I don't feel like I need to be there to tell them what they need to do anymore. So there's less intensity. Plus, you know, the drafting in the 20s, it's not as fun. It's not the only day that brings me hope anymore. Like, oh, you know, if they get this guy, like, that'll definitely solve their problems on defense, and not that, you know, they're just a terrible team. Anyway, rambling about the draft. Let's get out of here. We'll be back next week. We might have some conversation. If any of the Penn State players go to specific teams, we might come back and talk about it on Friday. So keep your ears up for that. We can do all kinds of stuff, have conversations about the draft heading into the weekend, and of course, next week as well. I'm Thomas Frank Carr, Ryan Snyder. This is BWI Live. We'll talk to you later.